The first thing I wanted to ask you about, Stuart, given that, you know, just the recent launch of the sort of pictorial photographic history of Black Britain,
yes,
at Rivington Place,
yeah,
that magnificent building,
yeah,
and your involvement. The thing that really caught my imagination is that the name of the library, as I said to you already,
yes,
is the Stuart Hall.
Yes,
library.
It's a very nice gesture of theirs, really, to name it after me. A very nice gesture. So I'm very pleased. Have you been into it?
I have.
It's a wonderful room. It's one of the best rooms in the building. It's,
yeah,
all those windows. And it, yeah, really is spectacular. And it's a very good library, you know,
yeah,
for its size and so on.
Yeah.
So I'm very, very pleased with that association.
Yeah. I've always thought of libraries as a kind of place of refuge, really. I don't know. I mean, public libraries,
yes,
but...
Well, I'll tell you another thing about it. You know, I was going to say my move to the visual arts is very late in life. It's,
mm,
not true. You know, I've always been interested in the image,
mm,
particularly interested in photography.
Yeah.
Always been interested in painting. I didn't know very much about it, you know, mm, etc. But then I got involved with Innova and Autograph as a chair, as a two boards,
mm,
etc. Two things about that. One is that, you know, the artists around them are half my age. You know, they really are in their 40s. Lots,
mm,
of them were, you know, active, emerged in the 80s.
Mm.
So, you know, they're in their, you know, in their early 40s now.
Mm.
So they just kind of rejuvenated me. It was like a,
mm,
it was like a dose of monkey gun. Come alive again, you know,
yeah,
there's lots of people out there who want to talk to you,
mm,
whose work you can help to facilitate,
mm,
you write a bit in relation to them, as I always do.
Mm.
I always write a bit in relation to whatever I'm doing, rather than,
mm,
any longer plan, you know,
mm,
of work. So that mattered a very great deal.
Mm.
But the one thing I will say about them is that they're not really very much into books.
Mm.
You know, they think writing is sort of passé. they're also not very into, you know, academic writing.
Mm.
You know, this is only mildly, this is only mild criticism.
Mm.
It's not true of all of them. Jelaine,
mm,
Tawadros is, you know,
mm,
very, very intellectual kind,
mm,
of person. Mark, you know, his heart is elsewhere.
Mm.
But he's, you know, he'd recently done an MA, and so he's starting to read a lot of the,
mm,
debates that he hadn't read before.
Mm.
So it's not a hostility.
No.
But it's just not...
Yeah.
In, quite in their universe, in the way,
yeah,
in which it is in mine.
Yeah? Yes, indeed.
So what I'm very glad about is that,
yeah,
there's this subversive thing called an old-style library with a lot of books sitting there at the heart of this,
yeah,
you know, visual arts building, wonderful building, etc., quietly throbbing away.
Yeah, absolutely. What a fantastic thing. Well, you know, as well, I mean... Many people have said this, you know, that your work has been enabling, and we were just talking about it, I certainly feel that very strongly. So, you know, many respects, but I bet a lot of those books that are in that library are people that your work has touched,
yes, no,
indirectly or directly, you know.
No, that's true, yeah. Oh, yes, it's not sort of, you know, it's not at all surprising or out of order that it should be there. That is,
mm,
that is quite true.
Mm.
On the other hand, you know, it represents all those things I don't really know about but would like to know about.
Mm.
You know, I would really like to know more about art and the history of art, and especially the history of modern art,
mm,
and modern, you know, I'd like to be able to write with more authority about that,
mm,
than I feel really confident in doing. Though I've written,
mm,
recently, you know, I've written about much more about that than about anything else,
mm,
in the last 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
But it's not an area which I feel is mine in the way in which,
mm,
other areas were.
Mm.
So it's not unrelated to it. And actually, more surprisingly, many people say now, including artists, how formative that work was in some ways for them.
Mm.
And, you know, I don't quite understand it.
Mm.
I did an interview with Hans Ulbricht, you know who he is?
Mm, yeah, sure.
Yes, and he's now at the Serpentine,
mm,
etc. He thought this interview was... He published it in the book of Discussions with Artists. He mainly wanted to know how many artists were at the Center for Cultural Studies, you know, what were they interested in. Of course, there weren't any.
No.
Not one.
No.
You know? There were a few people interested in photography after a while.
Mm.
But it just wasn't like that. So,
mm,
you know, it's partly because cultural studies has now become a much broader set of influences, and then visual cultural studies is a kind of illegitimate child, and that taken it into art history and inflected the field, etc. So I quite understand why they imagine that this is where culture studies began, although it wasn't. The same thing used to happen about film. You know, we were passionately interested in film, and film is for me, in some ways, the visual medium that I most respond to, directly respond to, and emotionally respond to. But we didn't have the money to work on film, you know, to show film, get extracts, get copies, etc. You can't work without that, you know, the primary medium to look at all the time. So we sort of decided we couldn't do much research on film, the culture study. But people imagine that culture studies was falling down with film.
Yeah.
And the same bit about visual arts now.
But I suppose one of the things which I just preparing for today, of things that you've said in the past, is how much there was at stake in the artistic work of well, a whole range of artists, of I guess, who were coming of age in the 80s.
Yeah.
But it doesn't surprise me to hear them say also that the ideas and the things that you opened at that time enabled them to think about what they could do differently.
Yes, yes. Well, I think that is that's the key moment, in a sense. It's the big explosion in the visual arts and photography amongst second-generation black people.
Yeah.
It was born out of British racism and anti-racism rather than, you know, the colonial or the slavery. Or, you know, it's born out of that direct experience.
Yeah.
And by then I was writing about that.
Yeah,
you know, quite consistently, and in a sense more consistently than I ever had before.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, it's very much a mutual reciprocal influence, you know. I could see that they were deeply concerned about identity and their relation to the present and the past, but that it couldn't be, their relationship could not be described in terms of a return to roots. Okay? And so I wrote about that. I wrote about cultural identity in those terms. Well, they were some of the people I was looking at, so not surprisingly, they found, you know, the way in which I tried to explore that in some of those essays sympathetic.
Yeah.
So it was a double movement, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, that's not the first time that's happened. The fact is, I don't want to go into this, please. But, you know, I left the Caribbean in flight from the Caribbean.
Yeah.
I felt I couldn't be, you know, I couldn't fulfill my potential there, and I couldn't work out my relationship to Jamaican culture.
Yeah.
I just couldn't, because of my middle-class formation, because my parents are not only brown, but thought, you know, the world had disappeared with the departure of the British. Coming departure of the British. Okay, so I was in flight. And then I discovered my subject.
Yeah.
My subject was coming out of the station at Paddington. You know, it was Caribbean's hair. It was the Windrush hair. That has been my subject. So this is what I had to explain when I did the conference. Are you a Caribbean intellectual? Yes, but it's not the Caribbean you have in mind. I, unfortunately, have not participated in the building of the nation there. So I'm at a little bit of distance from the national moment, which set fire to their imagination in Kingston. But Caribbean people have been my continuous subject. Lots of things that I've written about that don't appear to be about that are through the prism of trying to work out who they are, who they think they are, where they want to go, where have they come from, what's their relation to the past, what's their memories, etc., and how they express their creativity, you know, how they express where they want to go to next. That's, you know, what has been, in a sense, my subject.
Yeah.
So that is really where cultural studies began. It didn't begin with Raymond Williams. It began with my tussle to come to terms with that experience. And, you know, which is when I first discovered I was a black intellectual. I never called myself black ever in my life, nor did most people, many, many people in Jamaica, including lots of people who were black, did not think of themselves in the way in which people after the late 60s came to think of themselves as black. So, you know, it was a discovery for me. It was a discovery of, a rediscovery of the Caribbean in new terms, and a rediscovery of my thinking about culture, and a rediscovery of the black subject. So it's not surprising that people who are then painting out of the invisibility, the marginalization of the black body and of the black subject and the black experience should hear something resonating, of that resonating in my writing.
No, absolutely.
And it's not just a sort of chosen intellectual project, you know what I mean? I didn't choose that. I had no alternative.
I mean, again, that's, I think, one of the things that's so powerful about your work, and I think that's one of the things that I always, you know, is this way in which you're kind of trying to make sense of those private, understood, you know, and not understood, you know, both estranged and knowing, close-up experiences and the wider social, cultural, political forces.
Yeah. Well, the I know what you're saying, and I don't. It's not. It's again not something I try to do, but it's just how I write or how I think, etc. But I sort of know what that comes out of. You know, it comes out of this horrendous family experience that I had, in which I came to understand that my family were living out in the interstices of the family, the most private domestic space, this huge colonial drama. I mean, that is what it was about, you know. So it was internalized into the intimate and emotionally charged sphere, theater of the family. But it had no, you know, it wasn't that it was something else. It was the same thing on another terrain. And ever since then, I've really not been good at thinking about the distinction between, you know, private and public, the inside and the outside, subjective interior and objective social. I don't quite sort of buy how that is usually written about or thought about.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I was going to ask you about this later, but you talk about it, you've mentioned in passing the idea of an intellectual vocation. And I just wanted to ask you a little bit about how you do the practice of thinking and criticism and writing, or is it something that's so habitual to you now that it's hard to think about? How do I do this? How do I do the craft of an intellectual vocation?
I'm going to show you the Caribbean book, because I do say a thing. I do respond to the conference. By saying, what is this strange object called The Thought of Stuart Hall, which is the unbelievable title that I gave this conference.
Oh, is that what the book is?
Who is this person that I, you know, we've been discussing for 2 days? I sort of see them every now and again. I sort of recognize some people. I recognize the quotes, but I don't recognize them all. And I hope people will give me the references. You know, so, when we had the launch, I went back to that. Because it's not something planned, it's not something conscious, and perhaps I should say, you know, that it's very limited. You know, there is lots of things it can't do. You know, I'm very admiring of all sorts of people that do things, you know, I think much richer, much more important than I do it. What I came at a certain point, round about the point where the cultural turn went into high theory. I was nearly lost in a species of ventriloquism. And I suddenly saw through this at the point where people kept making French puns in English. It didn't work in English. They only worked in French. You know, and I thought, this is a crazy way to do it. So it's not that one rejected that, but, you know, and after that, I just sort of had to think, however you think is how you're going to think, so you better be satisfied with it. And that's how you write, so write like that, because you know, don't hanker after writing like Foucault. You can't write like Foucault, you know.
No.
I don't have the philosophical training, you know, I couldn't do it. I'm not that sort of person. So write like you write. Accept your own voice. So, having done that, I'm not very good at talking about what that is.
No, I'm not sure any of us are.
I think about it, and I have some thoughts now about it. And there are things which other people have said. In that book, David Scott says he doesn't read me because of cultural theory. He reads me because of my political interventions.
Mm.
And I realize that almost everything I write is a kind of political intervention. Yeah, it may not be about politics explicitly,
mm.
but it is trying to shift the terms of the debate, intervene on one side or another, you know, clarify something, wipe some other distorting views mm. out of place,
mm.
so that you know, something else can come through.
Mm.
I suppose that's critique or criticism or whatever it is, but I'm aware that it is a kind of political intervention. I think that accounts for why, A, I've never written a big book, except for Policing the Crisis, which is not really all mine by any means, and secondly, while I write about so many different things, okay, I write mainly because people ask me to. You know, will you write a piece about this? Will you come to the conference and write it up afterwards?
Mm, mm.
I don't sit in my study and think, mm. I ought to write a piece now about this.
Mm.
You know, if you look at the stuff I've written on identity,
mm.
you know, the first piece was given at the first film conference in the Caribbean. You know, they're all occasional pieces. That's why they're not in serious sociological journals.
Mm.
You know, one of the big pieces on identity and diaspora is in this little collection that Jonathan Relevant called Identity, you know. Do you understand what I mean?
I
so
do,
there
yeah.
are interventions in a field rather mm. than autonomous scholarly,
mm.
you know, works.
Yeah.
Another thing I know about is that I am interested in the conjunction. Yes, I am a sort of writer about the present.
Yeah.
Yes, about, but also I think the past is understood in that way too. Now, you know, people say, what is that? I used to pass it off and say it's what Gramsci's interested in, because Gramsci does write about the difference, yeah, about the conjunctural and the long term, etc. You know, people have pointed out to me that Gramsci thought the conjunctural was more superficial.
Mm.
Okay? And I don't think that. So, quite. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't deny that there are longer term, deeper movements mm-hmm. of society and mm-hmm. economy, you mm-hmm. know, which sort of mark out different phases, for instance, in capitalism. Yeah. But I think a conjunctural understanding of the what is specific about each of those phases, you know, what is specific about merchant capital that is not specific about, you know, mm-hmm. not the same as industrial capital.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting about Fordist capital that is not the same as global capital,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it's just on the line of capital,
mm-hmm.
and the reason why I refer to capital is because this is something that I learned from Marx,
mm-hmm.
and surprisingly, not the Marx most people think about, okay? Because
mm-hmm.
they think Marx unfolded the laws of movement of
mm-hmm.
capitalism,
mm-hmm.
okay, which are going to be always the same.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. You know, because at that level of generality, you know, capitalism in the 15th century, merchant capital, was the same as global. You know, it's not.
Mm.
It's not.
Of course.
So you have to want, and it's partly what I've written about. I don't know whether you've ever seen this essay about the Marx's introduction, in 1870 introduction.
No, I haven't seen that.
In which Marx says, first of all, you can't just reflect the empirical in order to analyze it, okay? Because
mm.
if you look at society, it's full of people, so you'd say you begin with population.
Mm.
But the people are divided into capital, labor, slave and
mm.
slaveholder, and that division, that difference, is more important
mm.
than just the fact that they're people.
Mm.
He calls the fact that, beginning with population,
mm.
a chaotic abstraction. And the abstractions would arise from the differences
mm.
is more worked through.
Mm.
That accounts for why he says you need theory, not
mm.
to produce more theory, excuse
mm.
me,
mm.
but because you can't do without it. You have to break into
yeah.
the confusing, you know, fabric that
mm.
the real apparently gives you
mm.
and find a way in. So
mm.
it's like a microscope.
Mm.
And until you put a bit on the microscope, do you see the hidden relations?
Yeah.
Okay? And he describes this process as adding different, more levels of determination.
Mm.
Okay, so you have to add more. The basic laws may be the same, but you have to add more levels of determination before you. And this is another phrase of his: produce the concrete in thought. And so my notion of the conjunctural is more like that than it's like Gramsci. I really believe that the work is done by historical specificity, by understanding what is specific about certain moments, and how those moments come together, form a kind of configuration, never, you know, one that's going to last forever. Hegemony never does, you know, it always has unruly elements, and it's always struggling to master a terrain, etc. And those forces are going to produce another conjunction, a shift to another conjunction. In Britain, late 70s is a conjuncture of the conjunctural shift of that kind. Absolutely. What we now, what I thought of Thatcherism, you know, was really the end of something and the beginning of something else. You know, we're not going to go back to what was before it, so that's why I'm interested in thinking, you know, the values that we hold in terms of the present. But my sense of that break, people do ask me, how do you know of that? I can't tell them that. It's not a methodology, you know, it's not something which I apply outside to it. I have to feel the kind of accumulation of things going on, you know, and think this is a different rhythm. This is a, you know, we've lived with one configuration and this is another one. Now, let us try to say what that transition means, what this new one is, what the forces in it are, what the contradictory things, etc. So I think conjuncturally.
Yes,
I am what Larry Gosbo calls a radical conjuncturalist.
Yes, that's right.